This conference will now be recorded.
Hi everyone, this is Jacqueline Fox with OFN. We are going to start in just a couple minutes. We had about 50 people sign up and have about 20 on the call now. So we'll just give it a minute. I just wanted to remind people, if you haven't already, if you could mute your phone when you're not speaking, if you don't have a mute button, you can use *2 on this conference system. Also, then you would just hit *2 again to take the mute off. Also, please do not put the call on hold. Everyone will hear your hold music. If you could just hang up if you get another call and then call back in, we would appreciate it. Jacqueline Fox with OFN. For those of you who did not hear me a few minutes ago, before we start, I just want to remind you, if you could mute your phone, star 2 if you do not have a mute button, and then you would just hit star 2 again when you want to speak. Also, please do not put the call on hold. Everyone will hear your hold music. If you need to take another call, please hang up and then call back in. Wanda, I think whenever you're ready, you can get started.
Great. Thank you, Jackie. Welcome, everyone. On behalf of Donna Fabriani, my colleague, and OFN, we'd like to welcome you to our Staying Connected call today. The title of the call today is Underwriting Energy Efficiency Loans for Commercial, Community Facilities, and Mixed-Use Real Estate. It's Energy Efficiency Lending 101. The session today is one of a series OFN has provided and will be providing for the benefit of our members and the CDFI industry. Thanks to very generous support from Bank of America, OFN is providing capacity building as well as capital to the CDFI industry to encourage our industry to become more involved in the energy efficiency area. More specifically, our goal is to increase the awareness of CDFIs on providing financial services and products to low and moderate income communities, which will enable members of those communities to decrease the cost of their utilities. We have been very fortunate in the past to have a number of existing CDFIs who are involved in energy efficiency lending promote or tell us about the background of establishing and providing direct lending services in this area. We've also had the U.S. Green Building Council featured last year to give us more of a technical background on energy efficiency and how it works and why it's important. For today's topic, we've invited Rob Sanders of Rob Sanders and Associate, a clean energy community development consultant, to provide a step-by-step guide to how one would actually underwrite energy efficiency loans and the types of questions to ask and the type of due diligence that needs to be done. We are planning on a number of sessions in the future, which will again give our CDFI members and the CDFI industry additional knowledge on how to go about actually offering energy efficiency loans to their end borrowers. I would also like to remind you that OFN is actively looking for CDFI who are interested in making themselves available or have an interest in tapping into low interest rate capital and low interest rate loans that Bank of America is supporting OFN in offering. So to the extent after hearing the session today, you find that your organization is interested in pursuing capital, please feel free to email me at OFN. At this point, I'd like to introduce Rob Sanders, who will give you, again, a good foundation for either enhancing your existing energy efficiency program or perhaps establishing one that could benefit your end borrowers. Rob?
Thanks, Wanda. Hello, everybody. Last time I gave this presentation, it took 2 hours. We're going to do this in 40 minutes, so this is a surface dive rather than a deep dive into some of the issues involved in underwriting energy efficiency real estate transactions. So next slide, please. What we're going to talk about today are a number of things. First, components of what I think ought to be considered in a good energy efficiency loan program design. Then we're going to actually skip the next two bullet points, the sample credit memo template and most of the checklist of information needed. I think instead we'll just focus on, highlight on some of the energy-related issues that need to be included in the credit memo write-up, and then get into more detail about due diligence and underwriting. But not go through a checklist of information that's normally in a credit memo. Then talk about methods of establishing the energy consumption baseline and projected energy savings, which is really a big part of what it's all about, is getting that differential right. And then talk about the projected energy savings impact on credit underwriting, how it affects the credit underwriting. And then talk a little bit about loan conditions that are normally included in an agreement prior to closing. A little bit about measurement and verification, and then wrap it up. Next slide, please. So buildings are where the energy is at. Buildings consume 40% of the nation's energy, 70% of its electricity. Building retrofits can cut energy use by 20 to 40% with existing technologies, nothing exotic, just what's readily available and proven. Retrofits can pay for themselves from energy savings. Even now, in times of low natural gas prices, a lot of building owners and tenants are asking, well, how vulnerable am I to energy price volatility and increases? What investments should I be doing now that have the biggest payoff down the line? And how do I best address the question of split incentives? Split incentives refers to the misalignment of the costs and benefits of an energy efficiency retrofit and who has to bear the repayment of those loans. So often it involves, it's in a net lease situation where the tenants are responsible for the utility bill payments, but the owner of the real estate has to take out the loan and repay it. The building owner may not be able to enjoy the energy savings, cost savings that the tenant is appreciating, and so there's a misalignment or a split incentive there, and that's often something you need to identify upfront in underwriting a transaction. Next slide, please. So what makes a good energy efficiency loan program design? I would highlight these items. First of all, there are two kinds of energy efficiency loan program models. One would be building related, which is really what we're going to be talking about today. And there are four types or categories of those, and we'll talk about that. The other would be commercial energy efficiency related enterprises. These are supply chain companies. So that's really underwriting a commercial business on its business merits, on its credit. So in the kinds of requirements they would have would be growth capital or machinery equipment acquisition or working capital or receivables financing, the typical things you'd find in a business loan. But we're going to be talking about the building related portfolios today. I can't emphasize enough that a mini business plan is critical for this, as it would be in a development of any new portfolio. So that would include identifying target markets that you're going to go after, what loan products and services you can realistically provide that you need to provide, who's going to actually do the work, whether that's in-house or contracted services, and then, of course, a set of financial projections that are realistic. Next slide, please. The other components would be identifying sources of subsidy and credit enhancement to get the energy efficiency program going. Part of that is the initial program operating subsidy before the net financial income covers the actual operating expenses of this new business line. And then, of course, credit enhancement, which would be available, which would then help leverage additional capital to lend or make the capital that is used for the program more affordable. So interest rate buy downs, loan loss reserves, guarantees, all are helpful, if not needed, in order to do this kind of lending affordably. Then identify products and services to be provided or coordinated. These include the products, the typical products of construction and mini-perm loans, or in some instances, depending on capital source, fully amortizing mortgages that you can provide. Technical assistance. Really, the CDFI has the opportunity to ensure that the borrower is getting great advice in a fairly complicated transaction. So the whether internal to the CDFI or through somebody who's good, who they're working with, it's good to have an owner's rep, a borrower's rep, when they're working with their design team or contractors, to be sure that that a good project that's realistic is being implemented. So energy audits and building energy modeling, of course, is one of the services that has to be involved in these transactions. Energy efficiency workforce training programs. Many CDFIs like to incorporate a workforce training program, whether they do it themselves or identify one that they want to work with. And then assistance with measurement and verification. We'll talk a little bit about that later. And then one of the critical things to make a program work, obviously, is establishing minimum energy savings targets that the projects, that the portfolio will achieve. So is that going to be 20% savings over normal traditional practices, 25%, 30%? What is the story you want to tell, and how will you judge the success or performance of the energy efficiency program portfolio on its energy merits? Next slide, please. This one probably should have been first in many ways, creating a strong marketing plan. Pipeline in this is critical. So deployment of the capital always is critical, but these are more complicated than typical retrofit projects or rehab projects. And there is some additional hand-holding involved here. Applicants can drop out, so being sure that you're seeing enough deals, of course, is critical. Identify strong sources of deal flow and partnerships that incorporate others' pipelines is probably the best offense here. Creating policies and procedures for energy efficiency lending. This could spell out not only what kinds of products will be available for energy efficiency loans, but are the debt service coverage ratios going to be impacted by the projected energy savings? Are you going to give value to that, to those projections, projected cost savings? Is it going to impact the collateral that's necessary for your transactions? So, there are a number of things that may be reflected in the policies as a result of having an energy efficiency program. And then, I would say that the best processes I see have a dual tier application financing request loan application form. One would be a summarized or shorter request form before inviting a full application. And the reason for that is that this is an especially iterative process in the sense that you're underwriting both the credit and the energy impact of the project. So you don't want one aspect, you don't want the credit to get out too far out ahead of the energy evaluation for the project, and vice versa. And because there's some additional costs involved in doing an energy project as far as the audit and the modeling in some instances, it's good to know that you have a reasonable credit that's likely to go to committee before asking somebody to go through a lot of work. And the other way around too. If somebody has a strong credit, but they don't know what they're doing on the energy side and are not really very much committed to it, but are more interested in the source of capital, just getting some capital, you need to know that and sort of do an iterative process before you spend a lot of resource and time. Next slide, please. And then establish standards for participating contractors. It's important to have a qualified contractors list. Usually, you can use somebody else's, and most utilities who have energy, which have energy efficiency rebate and subsidy programs, do keep a list of participating qualified contractors. And once you review that and feel comfortable with the list, it's important to have a good list of contractors. These contractors are both on the energy technical services side, but also just contractors who are used to doing energy efficiency projects. A lot of contractors, as you know, are used to doing things their way, one way, and they've never been criticized for oversizing building systems to the building itself on the energy side. They, you know, no one criticizes them for having too large a furnace, unless you're concerned about the energy efficiency of that unit. So it's good to work with people who understand and have experience in this field. You may want to consider recruiting one or more loan committee members who have energy-related experience. It's not necessary, but it can help in some ways with additional deal flow if there are referral opportunities or they know people who organizations that you should be in touch with. Also, it's good to have a friendly soul in the loan committee who appreciates this portfolio. And then consider combining renewable energy measures at the same time you do energy efficiency. If the project has the capacity to do both, and those could be, you know, photovoltaics or geothermal heat pump installations or solar thermal, all are very useful in securing energy savings over time by reducing conventional energy. Not only conventional energy consumption, but a cost over time. Some of those technologies have no cost of fuel at all, such as the sun. So, okay, next slide, please. We don't have a credit memo to walk through, and we're going to go very quickly through the next few slides, but I did want to highlight on this slide some things that need to be addressed in the credit write-up. Basically, it's credit is credit. It's traditional credit analysis, but with some additional evaluation. You'll want to evaluate the design team and contractor experience in light of their work on energy projects. You'll need to review the energy audit and the modeling report. And we'll talk a little bit about how that's done. There'll need to be sensitivity analysis of the energy savings calculations, both on the consumption and the cost side. A thorough review of the energy-related portion of the budget. Does it make sense? There are ways to do that. And that the energy-related portion of the budget needs to be reconciled against the energy audit that you'll have in hand. Architectural plans, construction docs once they're available, and then cost estimates, contractor bids, and the like. You want to be sure that the project that's being presented is the same one that's reflected in the actual deal docs. Then an assessment of the operations and maintenance risk here. Some of the energy efficiency measures will rely on behavior of the occupants. Some of the measures will degrade over time. In fact, they almost all of them do. So that needs to be kept in mind. And then address issues of questionable collateral. You know, energy conservation measures don't necessarily provide much value at liquidation. The insulation has no value at liquidation, nor does, you don't want to take the windows out or the roof off or rip out the HVAC system. So that has to be can ask to be acknowledged. Please advance the next slide, and the next slide, and the next slide. We're going to make 40 minutes after all. Now we're going to dive into a very basic component of this energy underwriting, which is how you establish baseline energy consumption and the projected energy savings. This energy analysis is really a two-step process. First, you establish an energy goal, which we talked about. Is it going to be 20, 25, 30% in each project? And then you show how the project achieves that goal, how you're going to get to that, how that difference will be achieved through the financing. There are four categories of energy efficiency projects. One involves limited energy retrofit measures, or the replacement of single pieces of equipment or single systems in an existing occupied building. So existing building, one or two or three measures. A second category is extensive energy retrofit measures in an existing occupied building. So more intense retrofit in an existing building. Third would be a gut rehab of an existing unoccupied building that's going to be renovated for a different use than what it had before. And then new construction would be the fourth category. Each of these categories needs a different approach to establishing how the energy efficiency goals will be achieved. Next slide, please. Let's take the first one. This would be limited energy efficiency measures in an existing occupied building. We're talking generally three energy conservation measures or fewer. And this often occurs at the time of swapping out equipment because of the useful economic life no longer being there in the equipment. Here, you calculate the energy consumption of the existing piece of equipment that you're replacing. Then you review cut sheets of the new system that you intend to replace with. And then you review the cost estimates, the estimated energy consumption and useful life of the new equipment that's going to be installed, and then calculate the estimated annual and lifetime savings for those new measures over the existing measures in terms of the operating and maintenance costs, the energy consumption savings, the energy cost savings. And the energy cost savings are going to reflect your assumptions on what the future energy costs are going forward, because energy prices do not stay static. Next slide, please. So that's the easy one. Another category would be extensive energy efficiency measures in existing occupied buildings. Here, we're generally talking about integrated measures, four measures or more, requiring a whole building energy audit. Now you're looking at instead of just being able to calculate from swapping out a piece of equipment, the whole building has to be considered, how these measures work with the existing systems in place. So here, historic utility use for the previous 24 months is normally what's audited. This will now require an audit, whereas you could do your own calculation based on cut sheets internally. In the first instance, this is going to require an audit. Here you identify the utility rate schedules and tariffs for each building account, utility account. This is actually done for you in the audit. A load and demand profile is prepared for the utility accounts. And a description of the building size, age, construction type, building usage, occupancy profiles, all that is important for the audit to be useful. The building envelope is described, including the air tightness, the R factors, U values, solar reflectance. All these are significant in figuring out the energy performance of the building. And then evaluate the major equipment and building systems that are in place for their loads, hours of operation, their sizing, their current sizing, their condition, what their efficiencies, operating efficiencies may be, what their remaining useful life is likely to be. And that would also include plug loads for evaluation on the project. Plug loads will vary dramatically, as you can imagine. Health centers or manufacturing uses, most manufacturing uses have heavy, heavy plug loads, whereas some don't have very significant plug loads. Next slide, please. The other thing would be the energy audit then describes how the energy conservation measures are going to be implemented, and when which ones are going to be implemented. And here, all the assumptions that are listed in the audit must be specified. The assumptions must be specified. Calculations must disclose essential data and formulas and estimates and assumptions necessary so that you, the underwriter, are able to replicate those calculations, because that's how you're going to play with them, how you're going to stress them, and see if the project is going to perform as you hope it will, and what the impact would be if it doesn't. Next slide, please. A third category is gut rehab of an unoccupied building for a different use. This is moving into a building that you're going to gut rehab and make energy efficient. This is, so it's complete stripping of a building to its walls and floors. Because the prior data on the building when it was occupied isn't relevant as a baseline, you can use average energy consumption for an existing building in the same region with the same use. So just use industry averages. And that information has been compiled by the Department of Energy, USDOE, on the Commercial Buildings Energy Consumption Survey website. And that website is in this slide. And you know, in a mixed-use building, it's going to be several of those uses that is going to be, that you're going to have to look up and then do a weighted average on what the existing baseline energy consumption would be for those uses of a mixed-use project. But anyway, so you go with what's average in the industry for the region at this time. Then once the baseline is determined, you can calculate the project's energy consumption target. You know, it's going to be 25% better than that use that's industry's average in that region. Okay, next slide. And then the project has to demonstrate it can achieve that energy target by submitting an energy modeling report by a qualified energy consultant using recognized software to estimate the total energy, annual energy consumption given the rehab building with the energy conservation measures. So here you're actually building a software model of the gut rehabbed building, which shows how the systems are going to operate together to create that savings. The advantage of doing the whole building model, energy model, is that you can easily change assumptions and upgrade certain building systems based upon cost, availability, whatever you want, and it's done very quickly and easily. So once you have the building modeled, you can change assumptions to get to your target very easily. And again, the energy engineer can, the auditor can help you do this very quickly. It's included in the price of the service. Now, the examples of this energy modeling software are listed there. Energy DOE 2, Energy Plus, all those are, plus others are at this DOE website again, which is linked there. Okay, next slide, please. The last category of energy efficiency commercial real estate project is new construction. And this again requires an energy model energy modeling report that addresses first the building's predicted energy consumption if it were built to the existing building energy code. Now, keep in mind that the existing energy building energy code is really the worst building that you can legally design. That's what a building code does. It tells you what you have to do. So that is the baseline for new construction, and then you get your 20%, 25%, 30% better building based off that building code. Then the model prepares a predicted energy consumption with higher than code ECMs with the proposed benefit of the energy conservation program. And then the difference between those two is the energy target that you want to achieve. So again, the differential between baseline and the project that you're contemplating. Next slide, please. So those are four categories. Okay, what do you do with the information that you develop from the audit or the building energy model? It's critical, I think, that the energy audit details the calculations, discloses all data, formulas, estimates, and assumptions clearly so that you can replicate the calculations. It's not rocket science, it's basics math, but you want to be able to replicate it so that you can play with it and also defend it. Savings must be expressed in both energy consumption and cost savings for sensitivity analysis. The useful life of the ECM should not exceed the loan term. You don't want airtightness measures or insulation or light bulbs to be financed with 10, 15-year money or have it amortized so slowly that you have a big balloon that you have to refinance after 3-5 years. The energy cost savings are typically discounted for debt service coverage ratio analysis. You'll find that it's been studied that air sealing and behavioral changes have a lower correlation with energy savings than boiler replacements, HVAC swap outs, or other whole system replacements that have a much higher correlation with savings. So also because uses of buildings change over time, it's that combined with occupant behavior, it's good to discount significantly the energy savings, cost savings in a project, and most lenders do, most CDFIs do. So just keep that in mind. Despite the improved net operating income from a project, as completed appraisals generally do not reflect higher real estate values after considering an energy conservation project. Should they? They don't. At this point, they still don't. You don't see those reflected in higher appraised values. Next slide, please. Now, a couple loan conditions I would emphasize. I would say that these energy conservation measures have to be tracked so they're not dropped from final design and construction. Oftentimes, there's value engineering that happens during the course of a project. There's change orders that come up. You have to. There's a couple of defenses against this. One is prior to closing, the borrower must provide the final building energy modeling report based on final design specs that are going to achieve the energy target that's been agreed to. And then two, provide the final construction drawings, the specs, and cut sheets that is actually are actually going to be used in this energy project. And then the building needs to be inspected prior to all loan draws to ensure that those ECMs are present as specified. That needs to be clearly said in the loan docs, in the agreement. It doesn't mean change orders are difficult. It just means that they may need to be run through the building energy model once again, which is, again, is easily, quickly done, just to see how the change order and the specs affect the energy performance of the building. Next slide, please. Measurement and verification. In general, after construction, there should be, the borrower needs to provide energy data for at least a year. And this can be easily done with certain energy consumption data tracking software. There are three that I've listed here that are used quite a lot, Energy Star Portfolio Manager, Energy Scorecards, and WeGoWise, which is Boston Community Capital's software package. Any one of those will do well. Next slide. So, I guess in summing up, my feeling is that good energy efficiency loan programs have great marketing partnerships that integrate additional pipelines and have iterative application review and underwriting processes so that you don't spend too much time in a situation that's not going to result in a loan, and you're not taking a lot of time and money from a prospective borrower who won't be able to get there. Obviously, it's important to first establish the relevant energy baseline, reconcile the detailed energy conservation measures that are going to achieve the target savings with the construction docs and the cut sheets. So you just have to tie that information into what is being proposed in the project. Some of the risks that need to be addressed in this underwriting are the operating and maintenance risk, the energy savings degradation, how get a handle on that. The split incentives needs to be, if that is the case, it needs to be identified up front. And then collateral issues. It's important to replicate the energy savings calculations and stress the energy projections, play with them, and ensure that the implementation of these measures through construction draw inspections occurs. So change orders should be run through the building energy model, as I've said. Next slide. That's that. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thanks, Rob. So, Jackie, can you just remind everyone how they can submit questions?
Sure. Actually, you can either do them through the website, or if you just want to call out, if you could just introduce yourself with your name and your organization, and make sure that you have taken yourself off mute. Again, if you use the conference system, it's star 2.
Rob, it's Wanda. While we're waiting for questions, can you perhaps share some of your experience in underwriting some of these energy efficiency loans, some of the creative, perhaps, uses that you've seen in the past?
I'll do it without telling any war stories. My training is as a commercial lender in a community, always in community development with a large regional bank, but then for 13 years at the reinvestment fund, managing their energy-related finance portfolio. So this was both renewable energy and energy efficiency, and it was pretty broad ranging. We had very flexible money that would happen through through our managing system benefit charge dollars. This is surcharge on electricity sold in PECO service territory here in the Philadelphia metropolitan area, and so it could be used. In fact, it was expected to be used to do a number of things. One would be to take equity positions in emerging clean energy related enterprises. So we did a little equity investing, always in conjunction with other venture capital funds and in a very limited way. But then we also put together a lease financing private label program, again, for energy efficiency, but it was used broadly by TRF for other purposes as well. And, you know, construction lending, all sorts of things. So pretty broad portfolio of energy-related finance tools and services. A lot of money. As all told, by the end of my run there, it was about $80-something million that we had assembled under management for energy-related work.
Hi, this is Desiree Sidoroff from Craft 3, and I have a question. And as background, we're doing energy efficiency small business loans right now, and partially with some of the funds from Bank of America. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about the pipeline development partnerships that you're talking about. You know, we have a number of different options that we've developed over here, but I'm always curious to hear how other people are doing their marketing and their creating their pipeline.
Well, you know, there's so many ways that one can expand their existing pipeline. In terms of buildings, anytime you do something with a building is an opportunity to improve its energy efficiency. What do I mean? When you acquire a building, when you expand the footprint of the building by building an addition. If you're, so if you're acquiring an adjacent property. So I think a lot of pipelines can be fairly traditional and not the usual suspects. It could be, realtors who are trying to help people expand their operations. There are a lot of niche sectors that are particularly interested in energy conservation. Again, the health centers, that's a major cost for them frequently, and manufacturers. So I think by just thinking about what kinds of borrowers are likely to have a financial interest in doing an energy efficiency, then you can figure out which associations, which pipelines already exist out there might be integrated into your own.
Thanks.
You bet.
So we have a couple of questions through the site. So Matt wanted to know what discount rate for energy savings you have used or do you recommend?
Boy, you know, Mike, the truth of it for me is I do not change the debt service coverage ratio to reflect savings. But it's like a thumb on the scale in a situation where everything looks, you know, it's a situation. It has the energy savings, cost savings, can be the tiebreaker in a situation where, you know, it's a little bit problematic. But there's a likelihood that there will be savings over the life of the loan. So I'm fairly conservative on it. I say it's important that these savings be tracked and that they be realistic, but we're not going to give them full value. In fact, we're not going to give them value. That's a harsh way to do it. Many CDFIs give them some value, whether that's 25%, 50%. It depends really on the measures that are being adopted. And I think that's something to think about. If it is a major building system, a boiler or an HVAC system, much more likely to give that the benefit of some debt service coverage inclusion than I would if it were lighter measures on air, ceiling, and the rest.
Rob?
Yep.
This is Paul Hill. I'm with the Vermont Community Loan Fund.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. I appreciate your comments there, and earlier in the presentation you made that comment about even though that the net operating income from a project would be enhanced, that appraisals usually don't recognize and extrapolate that into and give the benefit then. And I think what you're saying there as an underwriter kind of parallels that in the sense that the market doesn't recognize it readily, you know. But do you think there's a point? Well, I guess my question is, do you think there's a point in time, sooner rather than later, or will it just be business as usual, where the market values won't reflect it at all? Will it take a higher jump in energy costs? Or is it just a more conservative approach will reign?
I think it will be reflected in appraised values in the midterm. And I think part of that is there's just, you know, people keep saying this, but there's some truth to it. There just isn't enough long-term experience knowing what kinds of measures in what kinds of situations, meaning what kinds of industry sectors, achieve savings over a longer period of time. And it's complicated because building use changes over time. You know, a lot of things enter into that. So I think that's part of the Bank of America capital is one of the conditions is that the energy conservation is measured over time so that more information can be developed in community development sectors by using this money in CDFI projects. And I think that's really important.
Rob, this is Wanda, and I would just reinforce that with all the CDFIs that are a part of the call, kind of as you're continuing your energy efficiency programs or as you're considering starting a new one, it's really important that you incorporate collecting the data. You know, it's important to find out kind of what the baseline is of the building and then track it for, you know, ideally up to 2 years after the energy efficiency measures have been completed, just to give you and to collect the data so we can start being able to show some quantitative data that reflects the impact of energy efficiency lending.
Yep.
And then Carla also had a question about when you were talking about the TRF portfolio, about the term, the breakout in terms of residential versus commercial.
A lot of the financing in the TRF portfolio is community facilities, commercial buildings, rental housing, mixed use. Some has been incorporated in New Markets tax credit deals, some in charter schools. That's mostly the portfolio. There, you know, affordable housing is another component of it too. Much of it is retrofit and not new construction, although there's significant transactions that are new construction. TRF does not do single family finance, so it's all commercial real estate.
Rob?
Yep.
This is Paul Hill again, Paul with the VCLF. Did you, in your experiences as a, either with TRF or as a commercial lender, have you done any larger scale biomass projects?
No, but presently I'm looking into that right now up in northern New England. There's a project that we're trying to do a conversion from fuel oil to wood pellet boilers, and there's challenges to it, but there's great advantage to it.
Yeah, I just we've been involved with one for a bit now, and it's not shovel ready. It's close, but one of the elements, like so many other elements of doing anything with an affordable project slant, that kind of carried over was the NIMBYism that our borrower encountered and went through the permitting process, but still nonetheless, a group of concerned citizens because of the nature of the biomass that it's green chip burning, that it's really affected the project's likelihood of becoming a realization. I just wondered if you encounter that, or if you can speak to that, or if that's a special consideration with, and it may not be as provocative, obviously, with other energy efficiency types of projects, whether it's panels or thermal.
You know, I don't know the wood chip technology well enough. I know that there have been fewer problems with wood pellet furnaces and boilers. So, in that there are commercial scale installations, a lot of them for schools that are using some of that.
Quite a few of our schools up here have done that, and the state has supported that with their construction money quite successfully.
Yep.
Any other kind of questions, comments, feedback?
Hi, my name is Ellie. I'm calling in from the Grow America Fund. And we've started, thanks to Bank of America's participation, a loan program for small business owners, so commercial small business loans. Challenge that I found as a lender in doing this, obviously, is not with the underwriting. Thankfully, we have that part of the process down just to make sure from a credit perspective it works. The challenge that I faced so far is some of the discrepancies on the energy audits we're getting back. So my question was, Rob, if you wouldn't mind sharing some of your experience, how involved were you as a lender in managing the different pieces of the energy process to make sure it kind of conforms to what we're looking for? Or was it something that the energy auditing firm kind of carries?
Well, all the lender can do is try to get a good technical services so that the information is likely that the measures once implemented are likely to perform. Then it's a matter of really just bird dogging that the measures that have been specified are actually implemented by contractors who know how to do it properly, and then track it. So that's the lender can't really validate the claims. All they can do is ask enough questions to know whether it seems reasonable, and then do due diligence on the energy auditors and technical service providers to be sure that at least their reputation is good, that they've had a good track record. So, I guess that's all pretty obvious. But there's not much more a lender can do. You can't really jump into an energy project and take control of it. All you can do is make people do what they say they're going to do.
Okay, thanks. I also had one other question that applies to the construction monitoring side. You had mentioned, once build-out is underway, the project is to be inspected to ensure that the measurements that were proposed are actually implemented. Does a traditional construction monitoring firm suffice, or are there special construction monitoring firms that engage in this?
I was just going to say, I think if you've got a good construction inspector, that'll be fine. Because basically, just being sure that what is specified has been, constructed, has been implemented. So a good construction inspector will know when that's coming up and will be able to confirm it.
Okay, thanks a lot. Yep. This is super helpful.
I bet you.
Hi, it's Ellie again. I actually have just one more question.
You bet.
Are we able to get a copy of your presentation?
Sure. You should have gotten one earlier with the reminder, but if not, I can resend it. If anyone else didn't get them, please let me know, and we can send it back out again. Are there any more questions?
Okay. Jackie, can you just remind the participants where they can find the recordings of any of our previous energy efficiency calls? I believe they're on the website, but can you give them the specific location?
Sure. They're a little bit buried, but I will – actually, I guess I can just show my screen, and everyone can see. Oops. You can see on the OFN homepage, they are under knowledge sharing, staying connected, and then podcast. So as you see, the most recent one from December is already up there, and we will add this one. Should be up in probably about a week or less. And then if you have any trouble finding anything on the OFN website, you can just let me know.
Okay, and more likely the one from April of 2012 should also be on there, correct? Still?
Yeah, so if you just keep scrolling down there in reverse chronological order, so just keep hitting next and it should be in here somewhere.
Okay.
There we go.
And there you go, April 25th, 2012. Well, Rob, it's a little after 2 o'clock. Thank you very much for this very informative presentation. And for all the participants who called in and those that shared questions with us, thank you again for participating. If any questions come up after this call, please email them to Jackie and we will pass them on to Rob. Please know that we have other energy efficiency related staying connected calls kind of in the planning stages. But if you have any specific topics that you would like for us to cover, we'd be more than happy to take a look at them and schedule something in the future. And on that note, I guess we can wrap up. Anything else, Jackie?
No, thank you, everyone.
Okay, take care. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Bye-bye now.
The moderator has disconnected.